The state of Florida is surrounded on three sides by water. Not surprisingly, that makes it an ideal location for U.S. Navy bases. On April 9, 2018, the Economic Club of Florida welcomed Rear Admiral Bette Bolivar, the commander of Navy Region Southeast, to the group's luncheon meeting at the Florida State University Alumni Center. She provided an overview of the various naval installations that call Florida home, as well as their economic impact. WFSU-FM now presents a delayed broadcast of that presentation, and here with introductory remarks is Economic Club of Florida President Ben Watkins.
Thank you. Just a reminder that WFSU is recording this program and we'll be rebroadcasting the program in the coming weeks. Our next program is scheduled for May 25th when Dustin McDonald, Vice President of Government Affairs for WeedsMap, will be here to talk about the cannabis business in California and across the country. So, we cover all ends of the spectrum, from the military to cannabis, all in a month. I'd like to recognize our sustaining members. I'm going to have sustaining members, new members, and our stand. And if you would please hold your applause until we get everyone recognized. So sustaining members whose dependents we depend on largely to keep the organization running, please stand. Also, new members, Linda Bergman, Rocky Beavis, April Dietz, George Hanna, Laura Jersey, Adam Millsap, Bradley Perry, Forrest Watson, and Iris Young Perry, please stand and welcome. We're thankful to have you guys with us. Also, I'd like to recognize members of military service and our veterans. All the brave men and women who've served in the armed forces, please stand and be recognized. Thank you all very much. Now I'd like to introduce our esteemed members of the head table. On my right, your left, is first is Bill Daugherty. But no, here we go. Let's go to the end. I'll go backwards here. Pace Allen Jr. is a sustaining member. Pace is a lawyer and CPA, has been for 35 years, and I don't know whether I would admit this or not, but he's been associated with Bradley Monroe. For many of you who know Bradley, I'd also like to recognize Pace's father, Pace Allen, who's been a longtime member and a sustaining member of the club. In 1944, Pace received the Purple Heart during his service in the Army Air Corps, and he will also be turning 94 this year. So, Pace, welcome. Thank you. Also, April Dietz is the Director of Accounts for Paul Consulting Group. She previously worked for the Department of Economic Opportunity and Tallahassee Orthopedic Clinic. April is also a member of Leadership Tallahassee and an advisor for the Hang Tough Foundation. Welcome, April. And lastly is Bill Daugherty, who is a public affairs officer for the Navy's region in the Southeast. Also, would be in my left, your right, Rick Grant. Rick is also an admiral in the Navy. He's graduated in the Naval Academy in 1966 and spent 31 years in the Navy. He was a carrier pilot and also a test pilot. Makes me wonder, for those of you all who know Rick, he still rides motorcycles very fast. And so he's never gotten over his need for speed. Rick is also graduated from FSU College of Law and served as 4 years the Judge Advocate General of the Navy. So he was the JAG for the Navy. And he spent the last 20 years with Municipal Code Corporation. So I've had the honor and privilege of knowing Rick personally and serving it with him at Municipal Code Corporation. And I can tell you, we're lucky to have the likes of people like Rick who go away, do their service, and come back to Tallahassee to contribute in lots of different ways to make this community what it is. Also, Dan McCarthy is also a 77 graduate of the Naval Academy and has also worked in the Judge Advocate General's office and under the Secretary of Navy, John Dalton. He's also worked for Admiral Grant and Dombrowski as head of legal affairs in the Southeast region for the Navy. He also went to the Naval Academy and has his law degree from Duke, but his real claim to fame is he's Cindy O'Connell's husband. Yay! So, welcome, Dan. And with that, I would like to introduce or have Rick introduce our speaker today.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Rick.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests. John Dombrowski, stay awake back there, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Some of you will remember that Bette Bolivar was due to speak to us last September. I don't know if you all know the reason she didn't make it, but let me tell you about that a little bit. She had taken over the Navy Southeast region just a few months before Hurricane Harvey hit Texas and elsewhere. Once she got that cleaned up, we had Hurricane Irma came through the rest of her command. If you track Harvey and Irma, you pretty much lay out everything that Bette Bolivar is responsible for. She is the Southeast Region Area Commander. She has 18 installations throughout this part of the country. She has Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Kansas, Tennessee, Florida. I think that's probably about it. And she spends a lot of time on the road taking care of these various installations. And she will tell you what it means to be an installation commander. But right now, I want to tell you just a little bit about this amazing woman. I've never met her in person until now, though we've talked on the phone in the past. And when I called her and said, tell me a little bit about yourself, tell me some of the things you'd like folks to know, she said, I got a little teeny bio, stick to that. Well, no, not exactly. So I couldn't get much out of her, so I had to go reading and finding out a little bit more about her. She's a Naval Academy graduate, class of 85. She majored in oceanography, and she's a Troy State graduate with a master's in management. Now, I'm going to be merciful. I'm not going to tell you all the commands that she's been in, and I'm not going to use Navy acronyms, because I can't remember most of them anyway myself. But I will tell you that she's been a senior leader in many afloat commands. She was a commanding officer of the USS Salver, which is a recovery ship. Now, let me digress and tell you a little bit about how that relates to when she was 8 years old. When she was 8 years old, she almost drowned. She had to be resuscitated, and she decided, I'm going to become a swimmer, a good swimmer. And she went on to become a Navy diver. In fact, in 2001, she was inducted into the Women Divers Hall of Fame. Now, Jim's saying, what's the Women Divers Hall of Fame? Well, let me tell you. They recognize the pioneers, leaders, innovators, and world record holders throughout the international diving community. Okay. She was a commanding officer of Naval Weapons Station Yorktown, and she is designated as a special operations officer for explosive ordnance disposal. She deployed to Afghanistan as the officer in charge of the counter radio-controlled IED electronic warfare program. I don't have to tell you all about all the problems we had overseas with IEDs, and this lady was very much involved in trying to keep them from killing our people. I asked her earlier, what was the best command you ever had, the best job you ever had, and she said, that was it. I could see what was happening every single day. That was the best part of my life. She's currently the commander of the Navy's largest region with 18 installations throughout the Southeast. An installation commander is responsible for making sure everything works. She has numerous landing strips, large expanses of land, lots of people. She's responsible for maintenance, for funding, and for all the things that go with being a large, large landholder. Folks, let me introduce an amazing woman, Admiral Bette Bolivar.
Booyah. Thanks, Admiral, for the awesome introduction. So, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, good morning. It is an absolute pleasure and an honor to speak to you today, and I thank you for inviting me. I appreciate your patience and flexibility As Rick said, last year was a little bit chaotic. We had the four back-to-back hurricanes, Harvey, Nate, Irma, and then Maria, that covered our region, you know, and it was a back-to-back, and when it was time for me to speak to you all, I caught the flu or strep throat or something, but I was willing to give my remarks over a telephone while you guys flipped the slides. And Rick said that was, you know, probably not a good idea, and he wanted me to come back. So thank you so much for being flexible. Before I begin about talking about the Navy in Florida, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Navy Region Southeast, who we are and what we do. So with the 18 installations in states from Tennessee to Texas, from South Carolina to Guantanamo Bay, Navy Region Southeast makes up about 20% of the Navy. And this Southeast region is very diverse. There are schoolhouses and training. If you're going to learn how to fly a Navy aircraft, you'll do that at one of these Southeast region bases. All of the naval aviation training bases are located in the Southeast. We have submarines at Kings Bay. We have ships at Naval Station Mayport. We've got Seabees in Gulfport, Mississippi. And at Naval Station Guantanamo Bay, Cuba is more than just the detention center. The primary missions of that installation are to serve as a strategic logistics base for the Atlantic Fleet for the Allied and partner navies, to support the counter-narcotic operations in the Caribbean, and to support migrant operations. And then as you head up north, the Naval Support Activity Mid-South in Millington, Tennessee, is home to the Bureau of Naval Personnel. So it's important to understand that running a base is kind of like running a little city. We have our own public works centers. We have our police and fire departments, medical and dental facilities, child care centers, swimming pools, golf courses, aircraft hangars, runways, and supply warehouses. When ships and squadrons are at home port, which is a significant amount of the deployment cycle, the installations, all 18 installations, provide the supporting infrastructure to the fleet, the fighter, and the family. And the economic impact of an installation is made up of payroll, not only from active duty personnel payroll, but from retirees, from civilians and contractors, along with the procurement of goods and services. So today, I'll look at all of the Navy installations in Florida. You'll get an overview of the impact that we are actually making, not only in terms of the local economy, but in the community as well. So if you ask any of our 18 base skippers what one of their most important duties are, I'm confident that they will tell you that it's engagement with the local community. And I'd like to share a little story about a commanding officer from Naval Air Station Joint Reserve Base, New Orleans. This was a few years ago. Jet training had been going on for several weeks at the base, and it was real loud. And feedback from the neighborhood was not very good. And the base CO didn't have to do anything. After all, the Navy has to train one way or the other. But he didn't sit back and do nothing. He took the initiative to invite the neighborhood association out to the airfield at night. He pointed out the training strategy, and he explained the big picture of why the exercise was important to the security of our nation. Later, those folks were great supporters of the Navy and even invited some of his sailors to a Thanksgiving gathering. Our success is directly impacted by the relationship we have with our partners outside of our fence lines, our partners such as you. And these relationships have to be enduring, not just when convenient to one side or the other. Our sailors, civilians, and family members are active volunteers in the community. They are coaching Little League, they're mentoring, they're reading the students, They're working with Special Olympics and much more. And the Navy holds an annual Community Service Awards program. And the Southeast region consistently ranks high Navy-wide in the number of hours we spent making our communities a better place to live and work. Fleet Week is an annual community relations event that provides an opportunity to showcase the Navy and the sea services to a large audience in South Florida. And that's going to happen next month down in Port Everglades. Ships actually dock at Port Everglades. The sailors participate in a ton of community service projects and fun events. And the week starts off with a kickoff party in downtown Fort Lauderdale. This is the 28th year, and the event continues to get better and better. It's a tremendous effort between my staff, the Navy ships and submarines that participate, the United States Coast Guard, and various foreign ships, and our community partners, Broward Navy Days. And I can tell you that we are all looking very forward to the continued success in South Florida. And that happens next month. Now I want to talk to you about the Navy presence in this state, which is substantial. There are 7 major installations in Florida, stretching from the Panhandle to the Keys. Pensacola and Whiting Field are the backbone of the Naval's aviation training pipeline. Jacksonville and Mayport together make up the 3rd largest fleet concentration area in the country behind Norfolk and San Diego. Each base has its own mission that is significant to the bigger mission of the Navy and the Department of Defense. NAS Pensacola is the largest base in the Southeast region in terms of the amount of land and the number of people. It's the Navy's first and oldest naval air station. Established back in 1914 with only 9 officers, 23 enlisted men, and 7 airplanes. Today, the installation is comprised of 4 geographically separated sites with more than 22,000 military and civilian personnel. The base is also known as the home of the Navy's Blue Angels and for the National Naval Aviation Museum. But the real heart of the Naval Air Station is the training. More than 59,000 students from the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force, Foreign Allies, graduates from training schools at NAS Pensacola each and every year. The installation includes 8 historic districts with 175 historic buildings listed on or eligible for the National Historic Register. NAS Pensacola has 2,500 acres of forest, 1,000 acres of wetlands with 31 projective species, including the gopher tortoise, the bald eagle, and the osprey. Each installation in the Southeast has an environmental manager, and Pensacola does a tremendous job of maintaining a stellar environmental record. I talked about each base is like a small city. NAS Pensacola is a prime example. Thousands of military, civilian, and family members live and work on the base, and they rely on the infrastructure that the installation provides. Pensacola is only 1 of 4 installations in the continental United States that has an active airfield and a deep water port. The base hosts nearly 1 million visitors a year at the National Naval Aviation Museum, Fort Barangas, the Pensacola Lighthouse, and the Barangas National Cemetery. Next is NAS Whiting Field. It's home to the Navy's largest training wing, Training Wing Air 5, which trains approximately 1,200 aviators annually. This includes about 60% of all primary and fixed-wing aviators and 100% of all Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard helicopter pilots. Whiting Field is a regional superstar when it comes to community service. In 2016, base personnel logged more than 12,000 hours with organizations like the Blackwater River Cleanup, the Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and also the Sea Cadets. Also included are the Civil Air Patrol, NJROTC units, Habitat for Humanity, veterans and Honored Guard events, and much more. NAS Whiting Field is the busiest aviation complex in the world, with more than 1 million flight operation hours a year. In 2016, Whiting Field recorded roughly 200,000 more operations than Atlanta's Hartsfield Airport, which is pretty busy. NAS Whiting Field operates 12 outlying fields located on 8,000 acres of land in the Panhandle and parts of Alabama. The Navy partners with organizations to purchase land around these outlying fields in order to limit development. And if you remember some years ago, it was news how the airfields at NAS Oceana, Virginia attracted development, and now there are homes literally in the path of the flight training. Our mission sustainment folks do a great job of working with organizations like the Nature Conservancy to keep the land near this, crucial to the installation and its outlying fields in its natural state without any buildings that put on top of that. Our outlying fields are designed to recreate the conditions of landing on an aircraft carrier, which is a kind of like landing on a postage stamp in the middle of the ocean. It's pretty difficult, and only our naval aviators can do that. Those outlying fields are so important, particularly when imitating the darkness of a night landing. New pilots will land and take off thousands of times at an outlying field before they actually land on that ship and that carrier out there at sea. Next is Panama City. Naval Support Panama City is located on 657 acres in the Panhandle. This small installation is making a big impact on the future of our Navy. Its three largest tenants include the Naval Surface Warfare Center, the Naval Diving and Salvage Training Center, that's where I went to school, and the Navy Experimental Dive Unit. Not just Navy divers, but all military and federal organization divers train there, along with our foreign allies. Nearly 2,000 students pass through the training center each year. They're on the leading edge of diving and search and rescue technologies. And with the economic impact of $673 million, the installation is the second largest employer in Bay County, behind Tyndall Air Force Base. NSA Panama City is home to the Naval Surface Warfare Division that conducts research, development, testing, and evaluation, all of the Navy's mine warfare systems, as well as other missions that take place in shallow coastal waters. The center is also home to the Navy's newest ship-to-shore connector detachments, consisting of the latest generation of the landing aircraft cushions, or the LCAC vehicles. If you've never seen an LCAC, picture a big hovercraft that carries more than 100 Marines from ship to shore. On the east coast of Florida, we have NAS Jacksonville, which specializes in anti-submarine warfare and the training of naval aviators. As a master and air industrial base, NAS Jacksonville's mission is to sustain, enable, and support warfighter readiness. More than 100 tenant commands include 14 operational squadrons, so they call NAS Jacksonville their home. The oldest naval installation in the area, NAS Jacksonville, occupies 4,000 acres along the St. Johns River and employs about 18,000 active duty DOD civilians and contracting personnel. The station serves thousands of retirees and family members, resulting in more than $2 billion being infused into the local economy each and every year. Hundreds of sailors volunteer at area schools, build homes, serve meals, clean parks and shorelines. And for 77 years, NAS Jacksonville has enjoyed a solid professional partnership with the city of Jacksonville and its surrounding counties. NAS Jacksonville is home to Wing 11, with six operational squadrons and one reserve squadron. Half of those squadrons are relocated to Jacksonville after the closure of Naval Air Station Brunswick, Maine, back in 2011. The base also hosts the Navy's largest aviation squadron and the only P-8 Alpha Poseidon Fleet replacement squadron, which is VP-30. And VP-30 prepares and trains U.S. and foreign pilots, air crew, and maintenance personnel in all facets of P-8 operations. NAS Jacksonville is also home to the Navy's first MQ-4C Triton Unmanned Aerial Squadron, with a training center for its operations and a mission control center. NAS Jacksonville has numerous facilities to support the fleet, fighter, and family, including an airfield, a maintenance depot, which employs more than 120 different trade skills. There's a naval hospital. There's a fleet logistics center there, and a bunch of recreational facilities for our sailors and their families. Next is Naval Station Mayport. Mayport's primary mission is to provide operational and logistic support for more than 70 tenant commands, including 16 home-ported ships, three helicopter squadrons, and thousands of service members and their families. Naval Station Mayport is unique to the Southeast because it's the only installation in our region with both home-ported ships and an 8,000-foot runway that can land any aircraft in the Navy's inventory. Some of the major commands at Mayport include the commander of 4th Fleet, who is the Navy's component command of the U.S. Southern Command, and it's responsible for all Navy ships, aircraft, submarines operating in the Caribbean, the Atlantic, Pacific Oceans, around Central and South America. And other commands include the Iwo Jima Amphibious Readiness Group, the commander of Naval Surface Squadron 14, as well as the commander of the Littoral Squadron 2. The future growth of Mayport includes two Arleigh Burke-class destroyers scheduled to arrive later this year, and 14 Freedom-class littoral combat ships will call Mayport their home by the year 2021. In February of this past year, Naval Station Mayport was selected as the East Coast forward operating base for the Triton unmanned aircraft system as well. And the construction begins this December on the new hangars that will support these unmanned aircraft. Next, there's Naval Support Activity Orlando, and it's the principal home and support hub for all military training and simulation commands. The Naval Air Wing Training Center Division and its Army counterpart are located on this particular installation. The Marine Corps and Air Force also have facilities right next door as well. So when you're talking about virtual immersive training environments for our warfighters, this is where it all starts. The base is located near the University of Central Florida and is in the heart of Florida's high-tech corridor, with the largest concentration of training and simulation companies in the nation. With a $1.4 billion economic impact, the Navy is alive and well in Central Florida. Next is Naval Air Station Key West, and it is home to 30,000 square miles of unencumbered airspace and year-round great weather, of course, with the exception of that darn hurricane last year. The base provides true train-as-you-fight capabilities for achieving and sustaining air-to-air superiority for our joint fighter readiness. Truman Harbor is home to a robust subsurface training schedule with units from Naval Special Warfare, Explosive Ordnance Disposal, Military Diving and Salvage Operations, Special Operations, FBI, the Office of Naval Research, Naval Undersea Warfare Center, and others honing their skills in the warm, clear waters of Key West. NAS Key West Port is a proven asset supporting the Navy's and international warships. The base's location within the Florida Keys, the National Marine Sanctuary, requires laser focus on maintaining the environment while also executing the military's mission. NAS Key West is also home to the VFC 111 Sundowners, one of three Navy's adversary squadrons. The Joint Interagency Task Force South has the counter-narcotics mission, and the Army Special Forces Underwater School will soon be joined by a new Marine Corps Special Forces Detachment. Now that I've given you that overview of the Navy in Florida, I'd like to address a few numbers from the Florida Defense Factbook, which looks at the state economic impact from the military as a whole. The Factbook is produced by Enterprise Florida, the leading economic development organization in the state. Defense spending was directly or indirectly responsible for $84.9 billion, or 9.2% of Florida's 2016 gross state product. That spending is made up of procurement, salaries and pensions, or transfer payments, which is all those retired veterans who come to settle in the state. Defense spending creates jobs in every Florida county, and most of those jobs are high-wage positions. Even in the areas least affected by defense spending, the military makes an impact throughout the state. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope this has given you some insight into the scope of the social and economic influence that our servicemen and women are making each and every day here in this great state of Florida. And so I appreciate again your attention, and I hope that provided you the overview. I gave you the overview of eight of the 18 installations that we have in Navy Region Southeast. So I'm happy to take your questions. I have fact sheets from every one of those bases if you want to drill down on specific numbers, because I don't have them all memorized. Again, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak today. So with that, any questions? Yes, sir.
How much of your jurisdiction is over the Marine Corps? Is it all or some? All located some?
So when you say jurisdiction, sir, so the Marine Corps, they have their own installations as well that fall under Marine Corps installations, MCI command. There are Marine Corps installations within the Navy region Southeast, but in terms of the command and control relationship that we have, they do not work for me. But at times I do support them in terms of base operating support structures if they need it. But we are certainly a Navy and Marine Corps joint team, and we're there to support them if needed. Yes, sir.
I noticed that New Orleans is in your jurisdiction.
Yes, sir.
There's a show on TV called NCIS. It seems to be a never-ending series of grisly events occurring. I think we should move that installation to someplace safer.
Sir, hooyah. So funny you should say that, sir, because we're about to do, as I mentioned, I talked a little bit about Port Everglades, Fleet Week Port Everglades, and so I kind of focused it to Florida. But funny you should mention New Orleans, because in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing a Navy Week in New Orleans, where we'll do the same type of thing. We'll have the Expeditionary Strike Group 2 out there with a few ships. We'll do some community relations types events. I'll speak at a couple of venues like this, and we'll brag about the Navy and what we do to support the community. So that's happening here in just a couple of weeks. So we'll keep New Orleans safe. Sir.
To what extent are the installations under your jurisdiction either affected by or threatened by seawater rising, ocean rising?
To what extent is
are the installations affected by seawater rise?
Okay, so if you're talking about percentage region wide, I don't have that number, but I can tell you that during the hurricanes, specifically during Hurricane Harvey, within the Gulf area there, we experienced some flooding because of the seawater rising and all that when Harvey came through. So, and then we had some incidents of flooding or water rising in our other bases when Irma came through as well. But in terms of exact numbers throughout the region, I don't have that, sir. Huya? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just wondered. I've seen it said that the threat of having a huge cost to deal with seawater rise in the naval installation. But I just wondered whether.
We'll take that down. We'll get back to you. And if you talk about seawater rising, I mean, this is about the St. John's River. So at NAS Jacksonville, when Irma came through, we certainly did not expect that river to rise as much as it did. And my quarters is right on the river there, and I can tell you that the river was like waves in an ocean. Okay, I mean, it was over the top crazy. We experienced that at NAS Jacksonville when Harvey came through, and we'd never seen that before. In fact, the predicted numbers were much lower than what we saw. I mean, we saw, 5 to 8 feet more than what was predicted. So it was pretty crazy. All right, sir.
Is the new era of cyber warfare affecting military operations? We wouldn't want you to accidentally bomb Tallahassee.
If you see me after, sir, let me take that question. I'll try to get you an answer.
Okay. Rick.
Well, I've got one. When I was a young flight student, I was privileged to fly out of Corey Field, out of Jacksonville. It was the best master jet base we had at that time. We lost it. What's the future of bases in Florida as a result of BRAC or any future cutbacks?
I would say that we're pretty safe.
Okay.
I don't think we need to worry about anything.
Not to worry.
We're good.
All right.
We have, between Governor Scott and our senators, we have so much support here in this state. It's amazing. My last region was in the Marianas, and that was headquartered out of Guam with Saipan, Palau, and just Federated States of Micronesia. And the culture out there was very, very aloha-ish, I guess. And it was a mix. It was a mix of, we had great supporters from the military, but then on the other hand, there were those who didn't support us as well. And when I transferred here from the day I said I relieve you, and taking command of this region, it's been nothing but great support from the community and this state. So, Florida Defense Alliance, they come and visit us at the headquarters all the time and say, hey, what can we do for you as they, right before they go up to D.C. and ask for support or make sure that they make a good argument to make sure we're safe for BRAC. They actually, many organizations come through to ask the Navy, and not just the Navy, all the other service, what can we do for you? And, they advocate for us each and every day, whether it's here in the beautiful state of Florida or up north, up in D.C. So I think we're good. Sir?
In the recent bill that provided additional funding for the military, how do you see that affecting the role?
So I can tell you that, I just got back from the what's called the Navy Flag Officer Senior Executive Services. It's called Infosys. It's when all of the Navy Flag Officers and senior executives get together, and we're brought up to speed on what's happening within the Navy, and we were just told that at the last gathering that there's an increase of funding, and so. How does it affect our region? I can tell you that for base support. I mean, we have gotten a lot more money to fix the damages that were sustained during last year's back-to-back hurricanes. We're also getting funding to improve some of our infrastructure. So it's been good. The challenge is we need to make sure that we, you know, we're able to spend that money, you know, before it runs out, right? We want to make sure that, and we want to make sure we're not spending it on you know, useless things, that we're mainly focusing on the types of infrastructure to support our fleet and our fighter and our family. So it's the fact that we're seeing an increase in funding, it's been good for us because we're fixing, you know, those leaky roofs and all of that. Whereas in the past, you know, we were constrained. We were budget constrained, and now we get to spend some of that money to take care of our facilities to support our warfighters. Sir.
When it comes to energy, renewable energy or energy independence for the military, what steps are the Navy taking towards that as things evolve in the future, especially energy diversification?
So, you know, the Navy has always been a great energy environment, energy steward. In fact, I can tell you that just last year when I first took over, we cut ribbons on renewable energy efforts, whether it was the REPO, Renewable Energy Program Office, programs with the solar energy panels, you know, and I just cut that ribbon in Texas, and we're doing the same type of thing here in Florida. We just did, I want to say, in Pensacola last year as well, but we're all in when it comes to conserving energy and doing projects that, you know, that lead into that whole renewable energy swim lane. Yes, ma'am.
The amount of the naval personnel and their housing, you know, in the Keys especially, finding affordable housing is difficult. And after the storm, it's been almost impossible. As it relates to naval personnel, whether it's in the Keys or elsewhere, what percent are housed there on the base and which are in the community? And do they have a problem finding affordable housing?
Okay, so in terms of the specific percentage on how...
We don't have to get into, like, you know, sort of half or...
Okay, so... So your question deals with, talking military?
Do the naval personnel, I'm talking about your sailors.
Yes.
Do they have problems finding affordable housing near their facilities, or are they already housed?
So yes, ma'am, we do have housing on base.
Yeah.
And we have housing on base for families as well as single sailors, okay? And so that's available for them. Some opt to live outside of the fence line, and you know, in terms of do they have any issues finding places outside, I have not heard that, I guess because we, you know, we're able to support them on base. Sir.
As commander of Navy Region Southeast, who do you report to?
So I report to Commander Navy Installations Command, Vice Admiral Jackson out of Washington, D.C. And so the way the command and control infrastructure works is we have a three-star, a vice admiral who's in charge of the Naval Installations Command, and there are 11 regions, okay, under that command, varying... a couple of two-star commands, as well as, you know, the rest being admiral commands. Okay, and then of those 11 regions, there are installations that fall under each region command. So in my particular region, Southeast, I have 18 installations that fall under me. My first two regions, I had Northwest, I had four bases, and then I had Joint Region Marianas, which was the only joint region in that whole infrastructure, and I had one Air Force base and one Navy base that fell under me. So that's how it works. 11 regions, about 70 bases, CNIC or Navy installations enterprise-wide. So, and each fall under those regions.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
So there are 10 other people in the Navy who have a position similar to yours?
Yes, ma'am.
How many of them are women?
There's one other. And in fact, she relieved me at Joint Region Marianas. And then the rest are guys. But I can tell you that the big boss up here, that three-star person, that's a female. So, and she's the first to be that. So. In fact, she had Navy Region Southeast. I was the one who said, "I relieve you, ma'am," to her. And she went straight to D.C. to take over the big enterprise.
Do you have a lot of women in the pipeline to move up into these positions?
There's no pipeline per se, they have just as good of a chance as our male counterparts if they, do what they need to do both at the installation and what they do for their warfare specialty as well. So, pretty competitive. Yes, sir.
You mentioned the Navy Marine Corps team. I think the Higgins boat was invented in New Orleans and helped win World War II. Can you comment on amphibious warfare, maybe in the Southeast region, and where that takes place and some of the advances?
Oof. Can I write that down and get back to you, sir? All right, here you are. Semper Fi. I have a good story about that, just so you know. So back in...
If you find me afterwards, I'll go ahead and take that from you.
So back in 1986, I was made an honorary Marine. I'll have to tell you that story after we break here. It's a good one. I'll take one more question. Yes, sir.
First off, where is your headquarters in the Southeast, and how long would you anticipate being in the command that you're in now? And then could you chat a little bit about mental health issues, because we know that that's an issue for our returning veterans. Could you speak about that?
Sure. Okay, so we are headquartered out of Jacksonville, NAS Jacksonville. So our headquarters is there, as well as my quarters. My orders say I'm there for 2 years. And so those are orders. I can tell you that based on my last two regions, that those were 2 year orders, but either I left at the 14 months or the next one was 31 months. So that's kind of a, plus or minus a few months. My 2 year orders here at Southeast Region ends next February. So I'm here for another little less than a year. Talking about mental health, I can tell you that it's certainly a concern, not only in the Navy, but service-wide. And displacing or putting more of those clinicians in those where those units need them. I'll put not my shore hat on, but my expeditionary hat on. I can tell you in the Naval Expeditionary Combat Command, and even in the special warfare community, where we have those issues when somebody comes back from the war or whatever, that there is a significant support structure there when we come back, and for our families when we're forward deployed. So that's just the Navy portion of it. But we just talked about this at Infosys, that one group meeting that we had before. And I am confident, and I'm pretty happy to see that we're putting that focus on, dealing with mental health. Back when when I deployed, we had some of that support, but we have even more so now. Okay? All right. Thank you again. Y'all have a blessed day.
So not only does, just to give you guys an order of sense of magnitude, we do a dog and pony show for the rating agencies every year where we go talk about the state and the state economy. The Navy is in the top three in terms of contribution to our economy based on the commander's remarks. Mm-hmm. It's right up there with the tourism industry and financial services and healthcare. So, and not only do they contribute economically, but they're actually part of the fabric of the community where they live. So it's really not behind the fence anymore. They truly are a part of the fabric of the community that they exist in. And I know anecdotally, out at FSU at Innovation Park, and Lo Bielby's guest is from Innovation Park. The Navy is doing research on electric engines. Down at UCF, they've got a partnership to do all the simulation. So we don't have guys like Rick Grant learning to land a jet on an aircraft carrier. They can actually practice somewhere before they have to go land that jet on a postage stamp at night, which seems, so that's what Rick did for his day job for many years, believe it or not. So it really is a huge part. So from Pensacola to Panama City, to NAS Jacks, Orlando, all the way down to Key West. It's all across the state and is a tremendous, it's an important part of our economy. So with that, Commander Bolivar, I would like to, and get this, the irony of this is the person who's perfectly suited to receive an eagle from Sandy Proctor can't take a gift of that expense. So in lieu of that, is a book, A Land Remembered, to teach her about the history of the state of Florida. Commander Bolivar, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we stand adjourned.
You've been listening to a delayed broadcast of the Economic Club of Florida luncheon meeting of April 9th, 2018. The featured speaker, U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Bette Bolivar, with an overview of Florida U.S. Navy installations and their economic impact. This program was recorded at the Florida State University Alumni Center in Tallahassee. Join us again next time for another Economic Club of Florida luncheon meeting on WFSU-FM.